and welcome to episode 240 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of Indigo Park, and joining me this week, the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
I love it every time you say hello, Dan. I don't know why. It's one of my favourite moments of the week.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by the creative hand grenade that is Tony Esmond.
Thank you. Hello.
I think that's the only way to describe you.
That's a nice short one. That was all right, that one.
Yeah, like your
hand grenade.
Yeah.
Can you write
a
pull quote for my next comic?
Oh, of course I will. You know I
love
will.
Love that.
Yeah. But before I do that, I've got to introduce this week's guest. This week we're joined by artist, author and creator of the soon-to-be-released graphic novel Barking, Lucy Sullivan. Hello.
Hello. Nice to talk to you again.
Hey, Lucy. Hello. Good to have you on, mate. Yeah. I'm looking forward to talking about it.
I appreciate it. I really do.
Don't be silly. It's good.
A lot of people, when we announced Lucy, a lot of people were excited about this episode because a lot of people have been excited about Barking, which is coming out through Unbound.
Long awaited. Yeah.
Long awaited, and we'll get it.
There's a long story about that. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Is it one that we can say on air?
It's one that I've been thinking I've decided I'm going to say on air. So I thought this might be a good way to do that. But not in a bad way.
Not in a bad way. No,
this
no,
is what's
no.
been happening.
Yeah, you know. Comics are a journey, aren't they?
They really are. Like a journey on the London Underground, you know? You never know what's going to happen.
You can always end up at Cock Foster's.
Yeah, there's probably a strike.
So we'll get into Unbound, Barking, and Lucy's work soon enough. But before that, there's a couple of things we're going to talk about this week on the show. One of them includes a hashtag that we have to bring up as well, but we'll probably save that until the shout-out.
We're involved in that. We're all involved in that one, aren't we?
We are all involved.
Sorry, I just realised my noisy dishwasher is going to start making.
I was about to accuse Dan of doing a wee on the air there.
I haven't done that for about 100 episodes.
Right, it's paused. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
You don't have to apologise for pausing your dishwasher, although it's the first time that's ever happened.
I'm hiding in the kitchen, so...
Oh, nice. Well, we've already had a big conversation about the Sunday roast that Lucy cooked.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, it was tasty, to be fair.
Nice.
You know what else is tasty, Lucy? It's our sponsor, Comic House. Look at that. I brought the guest in on the segue.
They didn't want to be involved.
I'll kick anyone dragging and screaming into my
segue. Where are we going with this?
No, calm down. But yes, Comic House are our sponsor. They love us. Well, they put up with us, and we love them. They are the indie comic marketplace with a difference.
Return the love sometimes.
Oh yeah,
I do feel like we do mess their spot up every fucking week.
We do.
I do actually quite like it.
Yeah,
Pete's a nice guy. He suffers as well.
Yeah, and you know, he's one of the family, really, isn't he? And every time we see him at a convention, he's like one of the nicest people ever.
Yeah, Pete's a dude.
He actually is. Yeah, he really is. Yeah.
And he loves comics.
If you write really stupid like me, and you can't figure out how the internet works, he will talk you through it for hours on end on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. In order to get your work onto their app, which you can find out more about. But if you've also got like printed copies of your work and you want another avenue to sell, you can list your book on there for free, on comichouse.com for free. Start selling straight away, another avenue to get your books out there. But like we just said, like everyone's putting their comics on Comic House, the app, which is brilliant. It's a subscription service, basically Netflix for comics. It's amazing. Only with that, you know, it doesn't instantly play trailers. That was a game changer when Netflix announced that you can cancel that.
Yeah, that did cause quite a Twitter storm, and I did feel like saying, calm down. You know what I mean?
You don't understand, Tony.
There's worse things happening in the
world.
It is annoying. Like, say I wanted to read, have I watched Death Race 2000 or whatever, and it starts playing the fucking film. It's like, no, I just wanted to read a little bit about it before.
Especially when it draws conclusions from what you've watched in the past.
Exactly,
perhaps your wife might not know that you're into hardcore pornography, and then suddenly it just says, oh, do you want to watch Bad Mums again? And you're thinking, I don't want anyone knowing I watched it in the first place.
That's a different app, Tony.
Oh, right. Okay. Right.
We can't talk about that. Well, they don't sponsor us, but if they want to sponsor us, we'll talk about them.
But we
talk about Comic House. Yes, an enormous library of digital indie comics. What great stuff is on there at the moment, guys?
We've got Retake the Complete Collection, Pre-Mortis, Volume 1, Sire Superhuman Crime Investigators, The Adventures of Captain Cosmic, Issue 3, Hopper, Detective of the Strange, and Raid on the Fourth, which I keep saying every week I'm going to read. Haven't done so yet, so apologies, Colin. I will read it.
But is this going to be the week?
Maybe. I've got so many comics now. I've loads.
All right.
So not as much as you, Teddy. There's what no you way. Mean? You've got a lot of comics.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you got loads of comics on there.
No. On there. I've got a few comics on there.
Yeah.
Tony's got.
Hang on. Tony's got one in the top 10.
Yeah, it keeps dropping down. Slowly dropping out the top 10.
You know what I mean?
Like a Milli Vanilli album.
Yeah. Some don't, though.
Yeah, some don't. Some play there. That's weird, isn't it? Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But you definitely need to get, if you haven't checked out the app already, there's a 14-day free trial. And I think as soon as you try it, there's just, I mean, the library's just getting bigger and bigger every week because more people are uploading their books. Even Tony Esmond, who
managed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm proud of myself.
And you don't understand technology, do you?
No, I don't. Anything.
But he's got work on there, which you need to check out as well. So go to comichouse.com, dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press we talk about every week on there, and more. So there you go.
Fantastic.
I think that was an all right. Ad, wasn't it?
Yeah, all right.
Well, I think that was good.
I don't think we should really slap ourselves on the back every time we actually make it through an ad, though, should we?
I like the one where we forget we're in the middle of the ad, and then I start shouting stuff.
Yeah,
and then we eventually. But you always seem to bring it back round.
Yeah, like somehow I have noticed that some of our conversations, the 15 minutes before we actually get into the subject of the show, we're talking about something else, and I'm trying to bring it back onto the sponsorship.
I think the segue to roast chicken dinner was pretty good, actually.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I think so. We got to think of the dollar bills. That's what we got to do,
of
Lucy.
Course.
That's how it works with us.
Of course,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all about the green. Yeah. Anyway, from brilliant indie comics, you can check out this week's guest and this week's book, which we all read. We all got a chance to read Barking.
Very much enjoyed it.
It's really heavy. I had to hold
it. Is
hold off link going. You might want to have some whiskey or chocolate or both.
Oh god, I get bad at whiskey. I can't.
I'll get super fighty. Yeah. Well, I'm fighty, so I don't drink whiskey. But yeah. Yeah.
That's why I gave
everything else. Yeah. I wouldn't go that far. No.
Okay. Now, the story, before we get into the book itself, Barking was one that was certainly on my radar for quite some time because it was obviously. How long was it always on Unbound from the very beginning? Or
yeah, I crowdfunded. So I met the. Guy Mark Balshaw, who's also an Unbound author, who shoots all the videos for their campaigns. And I met him this week and he reminded me that we shot the video in November 2017. And that's when I launched the campaign. So it took me 18 months to get to full amount. And then, and the rest is quite a long story. It's going to be the best part of kind of 2.5 years, I think. To get to the stage.
I mean,
and most of that's crowdfunding because I only made it really it's hard to know how long it took to make it, but I think the confusion is that I made two chapters and I was putting that out to publishers, and that's what I gave to Lizzie Kay at Unbound. She came on board with that, and I turned that into a promotional kind of preview comic, which I sort of self-published through with Unbound's permission through Rich at CPUK. CPUK, apparently, he likes me to call it.
Okay, right.
Got to get that right? Who's amazing. And talking of someone who patiently talks you through everything, Rich absolutely emailed me through InDesign because I'm awful at it. And he's made it make sense to me. So he's a really good guy.
Yeah.
Go to him for your comics. But yeah, I self-published permission, so I think some people have had a chance to read like the first couple of chapters already, and they sort of work as a self-sufficient comic. I think it's that kind of intro into how she's ended up where she is kind of thing. And then the rest plays out in the hospital, as it were.
I mean, for those that don't know, I mean, let's talk about the meat of what the book is about, you know, not necessarily the pitch, because there's so much of this book that we can talk about and discuss because there's lots of things going on, and like Lucy said, it is quite heavy, so
it is it's not a light book.
But what exactly is sort of Barking about at its core?
At its core, it's about a mental health crisis, and it's about what it feels like to be in that. So it's trying to be like a representation of what it's like to kind of really lose touch with where you're at. But it's also, I wanted to really talk about how we as a society view and treat someone in that position and our system of dealing with that care. And it's kind of based around something that happened to me in my 20s after my dad died. I had about a year and a half after he died. So I was in New Zealand when he died, and I had to sort of fly back, and it took, God, 48 odd hours. And about, yeah, it was horrific. It's just, you know, at one point I sleep at Singapore on some benches because I had a stupidly long wait for my connection flight. And it turned out I woke up and I was facing Mecca, and I woke up to all these people praying at me, and I was in this kind of really weird part of, you know, mindset. And it was just the most surreal, weird feeling I've ever gone through. And I was like,
and people don't realise when you, back in the day, kids are used to have been able to use Wi-Fi on planes now, but back in the day, you were stuck with no contact with anyone, weren't you, on a plane?
Yeah, you couldn't talk. I mean, you could. They had those weird airplane phones, but you'd have to have like a couple of grand for it to call someone, you know. And even I flew with, so this was in like 99, and I flew back with like Singapore Airlines and Air New Zealand, and they were pretty cool flights. You had a little Game Boy attached to your screen and you could play Mario Kart and stuff. It was quite a cool flight, but you know, I wasn't in the mindset for any of that. It was just the first flight was nice. So my parents ran a really nice in the circumstance. My parents ran a really famous Aussie Kiwi, I don't know what to call it other than a kind of drinking session London. So they ran.
That's
it
not the one up in King's Cross, is it?
Yes, the church.
Oh, I've been there. Yeah, I went there. I went there in the late 80s, early 90s, yeah.
Right, okay.
That was outrageous. That was like a Sunday afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, so God, that's how I grew up. started in our pub in Fulham in the 70s. And it was running up until, my sister still runs them now occasionally. But the high peak of them was the King's Cross days at Bagley's. They were pretty epic. So you
people
couldn't move
drink
in...
back then as well, Lucy. Oh my God, I've never seen anyone.
It's horrific.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all in just the daytime. So it ran from 12 till 4 on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And to be fair, most of them would walk in drunk, you know. So they were still out from the night before. And they would buy, my dad's genius idea was that you would buy bags of beer. So all this machismo would come in. And
that's
you'd
right.
buy the beer ticket and you could get three cans for a ticket. And people would be like, oh, yeah, I'll have 25 tickets. And you're like,
bloody hell.
Yeah.
It's beer. And they're like, yeah, we'll do that. And you just see these lads just trying to outdrink each other. And it's
The sights. I hate to say it, but I once watched someone self-fillet themselves.
No. Oh, God.
Jesus. Yes. Yeah,
quite, and he was quite famous for it. Yeah,
he was. We had strippers, so it was quite extraordinary. And he was what we called a special act. And it turned out we weren't supposed to do that because you had to have a different license. So he wasn't allowed back after a certain point. The '90s are wild.
How weird is that? We both saw the same thing.
Just, small world.
Yeah, it's a very strange place. But so when I got on the plane, the air steward, it was an empty plane, and the air steward had been to the church as well. So I told him what had happened, that dad had died and it was his thing. And the guy just turned around with a big bottle of champagne and he was like, well, you're going to be needing this. And he just fed me champagne until Singapore, and spoke to me about the time he'd been to the church. It was really extraordinary. And then I got on a business red eye from Singapore to London, and that was just horrific. It was just full of really grumpy businessmen, and I then had a champagne hangover, and I was just crying the whole way whilst intermittently reading Douglas Adams. So it was a really intense, crazy experience. But it was about 18 months later that I realised, well, I had a really awful night out, and I had a friend point out to me what had happened, because I couldn't remember any of it. And he told me I had an anger problem, and he was one of our bouncers, and he'd been in jail twice for GBH, and he told me I had an anger problem, so I thought I better
That's a wake up, isn't it? Yeah.
It was huge, and it was a shock, because I don't know. I just didn't realize what I was doing. And I went and got help. And then I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. And I wouldn't have thought that was it. Because I was basically really, really angry. And I was working. I had three jobs. I was out all the time. I had loads of friends. Like, none of the things that I think people associate with depression.
Yeah.
And it's sort of one of the things I wanted to talk about in barking, because it was not only manifesting as anger, but I was a really kind of unlikable figure. You know, I wasn't an easy person to help. I was really prickly and really hard to get through to. So I think it's also to think of that someone needs help might not necessarily come across like they do.
Yeah,
you know?
I think people
so,
can put a front on, can't they? I think people don't realise that. Yeah, which is why you get a lot of, you know, there's a lot of comedians who suffer from it, and people think it's a big surprise and stuff like that. Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's about that, but I also wanted it to be as entertaining as it can be in this context. So it's got a bit of a ghost story to it. All sorts of
I think
so
that's an important distinction to have, though, isn't it? I mean, you say you want it to be entertaining, and it really has. I mean, in my opinion, the most powerful messages that I get from things are usually they're hidden within entertainment somewhere, or not necessarily hidden.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy something and then it hits you harder, like, you know, the laugh, and then all of a sudden your heart is broken, or you know, you can learn so much. Because I mean, entertainment, we hear the word entertainment and we think everyone's smiling, everyone's happy. That's not necessarily what entertainment is. It's just, I think it's an investment in a narrative, a story, or you know, an album or anything like that. If you can be immersed in it, and if you've got that reader or that viewer, you can really open their eyes to things that they didn't realise before.
I mean, I agree. I think it's become a word that's just synonymous with sort of, you know, Saturday night entertainment, like X Factor or any of that jazz. And it's not. It's about, like you said, being taken into the world of something else outside of your own existence and just going with the ride of it. And I agree absolutely with that. I think that's entirely what it's trying to achieve. I guess maybe entertainment's the wrong word for it, but you know, I wanted it to be absorbing, definitely.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be kind of fully immersed in it.
But also, we don't want it to be a diatribe. We want to learn from it without it being just a lecture, as you know. And I think you've got to do that. I know I'll talk about this in a minute with my recommend later. And I think we learn more through stuff that like you say, absorbs us and does entertain us in some way, does, you know, than we would from just a straight lecture on a PowerPoint, you know.
It's too dry, isn't it? You need to
exactly.
Unlikable hero, you've still got to kind of be invested in that.
Yeah,
like, I watched this film last night, Wild Rose. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, but the country singer thing.
Yeah.
And she's really, it reminded me so much of what I was like, except for the two kids, because fortunately I didn't end up in that position. But I was just as prickly and angry, and it was just like, Jesus, you know, I forget what that's like. And she was you liked her so much, even though she just kept screwing up all the time. It's a really amazing film, and really a lot more forgiving of country music.
We watched it. And the question that follows on from that, Lucy, is a lot of people unfortunately suffer from what you suffer from, but they channel it in different ways. So I mean, the natural thing that people go for is maybe a novel or poetry or something. Why comics? Why that?
I love comics, and I've read them my whole life. And I think for me, they were always sort of escapism. So actually, when I was in my teens and also quite prickly, someone gave me Tank Girl, and just to see this kind of manifest of a girl who was just like me. And they gave it to me going, this is you, basically. You should be reading this, because I was sort of covered in earrings and had short hair.
I'm quite frightened by it.
And that character is a gateway drug for a lot of people.
Really,
enormous. Yeah. And especially the artwork. I think we all became addicted to Jamie Hewlett artwork.
It was really anti-establishment. It was real punky. Really
she just told everyone to fuck off, and it was like, well, I'm doing that and no one likes me, but everyone seems to like her. So what is the secret? Right, I'm gonna have a kangaroo boyfriend. Okay. You
know. We've all been there, Lucy. We've all been there.
It's hard being a teenager, you know.
And so what other stuff was influencing you?
A lot of Japanese at that point, because Akira had come out and I'd got Domu, which I still read over and over again. Yeah, it's just extraordinary.
That was one of the first, the only graphic novels you could get at the time, wasn't it? It was there wasn't a huge amount, but that first wave, you got Akira and you got a few other things, and that was one of them. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I remember going to Forbidden Planet and just we'd been to see Akira at the Prince Charles in London, and then going around to Forbidden Planet, and I picked up around the same time. I picked up an early Hellboy as well, maybe a bit later, and then I was in my teens when I got an early Hellboy, so. Got slightly obsessed with Mike Mignola as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I was reading lots of Deadline, 2000 AD, you know, all the stuff you could pick up. And
okay,
there was
cool.
that manga series of like different things that had in like Smith's, you could go and get a manga.
Oh, there was
Appleseed
was in it.
It had Appleseed.
Yeah,
And a couple of other things. And yeah, so it's always reading them. But I did animation at uni after my dad died. I went back to art school and I did illustration and animation and got into kind of 2D animation and just sort of was still reading comics but had sort of moved away from, I was drawing them my own but never showed them to anyone before that. But I had after I graduated, I started teaching a life drawing class and Nick Abadzis came who did Leica, he came to my class. So I actually got my book, my Leica book, signed from him at a signing in Richmond about two weeks before or something. And then he walked into the class and I was like, oh, shit, I can't. I'm not going to teach you how to draw, right? You have to draw. So, but we just became mates and, you know, spoke a lot about comics and stuff. And then I said, you know, I've kind of got this idea. And he's like, just do it. Make a bloody comic, you know. And yeah, it just sort of went through that. And I think the joy with comics, unlike animation per se, is they're so intimate. Like, I really wanted to get the story across to people on a personal level. And I don't think there's anything that can do it quite like comics can, even beyond reading a book, because you're presenting not only your kind of written dialogue and what you want people to say, but exactly what that world looks and feels like. Mm. You know,
we were talking...
so sophisticated.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. We were talking amongst ourselves about your art the other day, and we were saying that there's a personality to your art, and it's not anything that I would immediately associate with the comics that you've just described buying. It's I'm gonna call it a sort of beautiful scratchiness about it. It's almost like a Martin Hewson or something, you know, someone like that. It's got a sort of
there's a real fluidity to it though.
Mm. Sorry.
There's a real fluidity.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
I think that's because of the 2D animation. A few people have said it's quite kinetic. And I think I do think in keyframes and how, like, if I were to get someone moving, how that pose would be. And it's really hard to kind of shake that bug sometimes. I think. But yeah, thank you.
Now, how did you discover that style? How did you come across it? Because it's very easy. You go straight with the ink.
Yeah.
You know.
It's biro and I did a load of it. So it's biro onto. I was given a load of animation paper by a friend, and he said jokingly, like he's mad into comics as well,
right?
And he said jokingly, "Oh, you know, you're going to have to make the first graphic novel on this." So I was like, "Well, I've got all this paper," so I did. So there you go, Pedro. I made it.
Good old
said,
Pedro.
I did it. But. Yeah, so I drew it on that, and I liked it because animation paper is super smooth, and the biro kind of clogs, and then you get this nice kind of smear effect, and it's a really kind of pleasurable thing to draw.
Yeah, I was wondering how. Yeah, because it looks, you know, it's very inky. I mean,
and I collect the smears, so I sort of smear when I get it on my fingers or the pen gets too clogged, I kind of smear it in the corner, and I scan all of those in and build up a kind of smear library, which sounds really disgusting. I don't know how else.
That's the name of the episode.
So it's sort of textures and things like that. And then I also draw with carbon typewriter sheets. So that is definitely to do with the style of drawing I learned at Kingston School of Art, where you do lots of blind drawing and location drawing. It's so much drawing, and they teach you how to basically draw something by not looking at the paper at all, so that you're learning to just get that hand-eye coordination and really understand what you're seeing. And it absolutely clicked for me, and it really is a practice I still use. So when I was drawing the dog, or like any of the scenes in Barking where it's on site, like by the riverside or anything, I went to the riverside and drew it straight onto this carbon as a blind drawing.
Right.
So you
right,
get okay. like people flucking around to see what you're doing. And I've got like a drawing board and what looks like just black piece of paper that I'm scratching at, and people just think you're completely Barking. you're like, I can't lift it and show you because I'm going to lose my spot. So you have to come back at the end if you want to see what it looks like, or, you know, buy my book in 2 years' time and see it in there. You know? So yeah, it's a really kind of, I know it's not at all traditional, and none of the way I've made this book is in any way traditional comics making. But yeah. I just was so keen to get this very specific kind of feel to the artwork
yeah.
that I yes. just, whatever kind of worked and started giving me the results, it's like, well, that's what I'm doing.
There's yeah. a, so there's a touch of a sort of Bill Sienkiewicz almost about it to me.
Oh, gosh, thank you.
Yeah, there's a little, you know, the wildness of it he uses in his
yeah,
song. His stuff
is beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I loved. I was quite obsessed with Dave McKean as well. And,
yes, I can yeah, see, that. See that. Yeah.
Fluid line, and I had a book of his Signal to Noise. That's yep. just, yeah, amazing, amazing story. That was a big influence, definitely.
One of the things you're saying there, like, there's no kind of bar to people making comics. You can literally grab some paper
yeah.
and away
yeah.
you go. It's
yeah.
anyone can do it. That's one of the things I love about the medium.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You but can make it on a piece of tissue, maybe,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. Just... But the important factor is, like, you've chosen to make a comic, you know.
I mean, yeah.
yeah.
You say, oh, you know, you can make art out of anything. And there, I don't think there is a traditional way to make comics anymore.
But
no, comics
true.
Are a thing. If you're choosing to tell a story, whether it be true to life or whether it be, you know, experimental or whatever, a comic is still, there's still parameters to the comic book, isn't there, really?
Sure. Yeah, definitely, yeah. yeah.
That's the great piece. The best piece of advice we ever have on this show is just get on with it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that's really is. And we hear it off quite a few people regularly. Is, yeah, you know, like, none of this fannying around, just get on with it, you know, yeah. sort of.
Yeah. And it's the making it that kind of, I think, teaches you the lessons. Like, I've learned so much just making them. Yeah.
Yeah.
You take into your next project and your next project, you sort of just build it.
A lot of us learn by doing, don't we? That's always.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, your artwork, I mean, it's beautiful in this book, and it's really striking. And I love sort of like black, just black and white. I think there's a real skill to just having black
yeah.
and white. But there's a real, considering the topics that you're talking about and the narrative that you're telling, there are certain pages where you really get the, you know, it really gets in your head, and you really, it's almost, there's almost too much going on around the character. It's almost like you feel like you know what it's like inside the character's head, because so much is... You know, you've got words like voices that no one else can hear, but this character's hearing. There's a real
yeah.
mania to some of
yeah.
it. I mean, it starts off.
I wanted it to feel that, like, really overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because that's
yeah.
how it
okay.
feels to be in that position. So I
yeah.
wanted it to
okay.
feel confusing, and it for that to sort of begin to start lessening.
And it gets,
as she sort
it
of
gets,
goes through it.
Yeah, it gets quite claustrophobic as well, because when you start off, there's some, you know, striking, lots of white space, you know, and like when she jumps off the. There's a scene where she jumps off a bridge at the beginning. Oh, no spoilers. I won't do, you know, she's a superhero. That's the spoiler. No, but you know, that's lots of white space and striking artwork. But as it goes on, the pages just become fuller and fuller, don't they? As it just
yeah,
and it all
yeah.
seems to close in around like the main character, and there's so much going on.
Yeah.
How was that for you? Because obviously, you started from page one. I'm guessing that there was a sequential, you know, page one, end on the last page.
Yeah, it was quite a linear structure, which
yeah.
is sort of like against everything I'd normally, in animation, you never do that because your style progresses as you animate.
Yeah.
So you sort of
okay.
chop and change what you draw. Whereas with this, I felt like I really had to go through it. So I think when we went with Unbound, I had 2 to 3 chapters already done and I'd already seen them as the kind of big intro into this is her life, this is where she's at, and now where's it going to go. And then I had to break up it's a 10 chapter book, and I decided it was going to be 10 chapters. Oh, because I was going to self-publish originally, and I was going to do it, I thought I could maybe split it into two chapters a book and do like five comics, and then you could collect the lot or something.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out how I was going to do it because I thought, who's going to want to read a story about this? But then when we decided to do the graphic novel with Unbound, I still had this 10 chapters idea. So I thought about the seven chapters I had left and what I wanted to say about mental health and a crisis and the system. And basically you've used each chapter as either her character, and it's driven around a central kind of point that I'm trying to make per chapter. So as well as having this kind of overarching story.
So you had the idea for the story, but you didn't have all 10 written before you even started.
No, I had a loose structure of what I knew how it ended from the beginning. I knew that. I knew how it started and ended. Gotcha. And I knew roughly what I wanted to say. But then I didn't really start fully breaking down until I got my Arts Council funding in March last year. So
okay.
I then really made... I'd made the fourth chapter, actually. It's a lie, but then I made the fourth. So I made the last six chapters between March and July last year. So it was a really intense period of, like, writing, thumbnailing, writing a bit more, and then drawing, and then laying out.
What was that like for you from a personal level, though? Because the book goes to...
That's intense.
It really picks up, because you're talking about doing a lot of work in a short space of time.
Yeah,
and that moment really of the story gets more and more claustrophobic and intense. To be in that headspace for a good 4 months, that must have been pretty difficult.
Yeah, it was really hard. Because basically, the Lakes Comic Art Fest came on board in November of 2018, and they said, right, we want to give you some money towards crowdfunding, but we really think you ought to go for Arts Council and try and get the rest of the funding. So I did, and that took 3 months of applications and stuff like that. And I put that in the January, and I didn't find out till the February or the March that I'd got the money. And by that point, I'd made another chapter. And then Lizzie Kay, my editor at Unbound, said, so if you want to launch at the next Lakes, we need it done by May. And I was like, it's March. I've got six chapters to do from scratch. It's not going to happen, you know. And I was like, when's the latest? And she's like, okay, end of June. And then I got to sort of late May, early June. And I was having a complete nightmare with the lettering. And I was like, I went to Twitter and was like, what do you do? My lettering's terrible. And everyone's like, get a font, go to Dan Berry now. And so I did. And Dan did it in like 2 days. It was extraordinary.
Oh, wow.
So,
nice. Good.
We had another creator on who did that. I can't recall who it was.
Well, Rob Davis told me to do it, because he's used it for the whole of the Marvel and Southern trilogy.
Right.
And because mine's like I've written it all in capitals with a dip pen over carbon, and I really wanted it to have that because my dad left school at 14, so he only ever wrote capitals. So I just wanted it to be like his handwriting. I don't know why, you know, these things get in your head. And Dan did it. He just got me to write all this gobbledygook out, and he's made literally my handwriting into a font. It's extraordinary.
That's brilliant.
And then I made my partner letter it. My other half was like, okay, like, can you do it? So like, and he did the whole lot, which is amazing. So I could finish cleaning up all the artwork and laying it out. But yeah, it was really, really intense. And I ended up handing over everything second week of July. And I remember it was the last day of my daughter's school term. So she was breaking up for school for the summer holidays. And it's like, I'm never going to get anything done once you've got a five-year-old around. It's just not going to happen. And so it was really, really hard. And I was doing sort of 16-hour days at one point. And bloody I got glandular fever. I got glandular fever and couldn't work. I couldn't do anything
bloody
for like a week. And, it was really intense. You know, we just so focused on this deadline, and they were like, oh, if you can get it to us for the end of July, we can launch it at the Lakes. And I worked my arse off for that to happen. And then they didn't get the book done, so it was gutting. But and Rob Davis, the jammy bastard, was still drawing his when I'd handed mine in, and I was thinking, oh, Rob, you better hurry up because you're launching at the Lakes as well. And his book got there completely fine.
I saw you at the lake, so, didn't I? Didn't I see you there?
Yeah. I spoke to you briefly at the lake with Ian and Nikki. I asked you why you went behind the table, I think, or something.
That's right, yeah.
And I saw you at Thought Bubble because I had my daughter with me and she's killed her mad.
Didn't I see you at Hackney?
Yeah, I was at Hackney as well. I was everywhere without my book.
But now you're going to be everywhere with your book, though. That's the exciting thing.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. I seem to have hit every problem in publishing there ever is, you know.
They always say the greats and the classics, whenever you hear the making of stories, they're always a nightmare. So that bodes well.
I've definitely got all the nightmare stuff.
You can do a documentary on the making of Barking one day.
I've already got a booking to do a talk about it at the Cartoon Museum because they were like, you know, people need to know how hard it is to do this. So you're like, okay, great.
Yeah,
I can talk.
Just tell them to buckle up and bring a bottle of wine.
Fever.
Cover that.
Yeah,
it's not a problem.
I will say
it makes the making of Apocalypse Now seem like nothing.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm more, what's the Lost in La Mancha? I think I'm on that.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah. Still trying to
all sorts of things,
push
that
boat up a muddy hill.
Fitzcarraldo, yeah.
I will say huge shout out to your partner because that is an epic lettering job to do. I know.
I mean, I had all the things in place, bless him. And he's an animation, well, he's head of second year animation at Kingston. And he hasn't had to do that sort of thing for quite a long time. But I think he quite enjoyed it. But he did it sort of back to front so that he didn't fully get his head around the story so that he can still read it one day.
Okay. Did you stand behind him?
Stephen. I shouldn't call him my partner. He's called Stephen.
Stephen, top work.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be my next question, Lucy. It's quite something to make a comic, and you know, well done. But it's also quite something to put something so personal out there.
Yeah.
I've tried writing some sort of really personal stuff, and I've ended up putting it aside because I thought, I don't know whether I want it out there. I'm not sure people will think of me. Was that something you found difficult and then worried about what the implications were of it? Or
yeah, I did at the start. It's one of the reasons I came up with a character to drive the narrative was that I was originally writing it from my own perspective. And I was writing myself much nicer than I was. So it's like, I wasn't actually that bad, you know. Yeah. And then you're like, no, I was a nightmare. So I need to put that in there. And so, using a character, making it an allegory, and also because it's not just my story, it's also a story, I've combined what happened to me with what happened to my friend. So I wasn't sectioned. I managed to get a private help for myself. So I did CBT through a private doctor because I didn't want, my grandmother was in and out of mental health hospitals and I absolutely didn't want to be where she was, you know, she had an awful time. And then two of my friends were sectioned afterwards and their treatment was just so horrific. One of them was Japanese and spoke very little English and it's just what she went through is unbelievable. So I wanted to combine all of those things. It's like, look, it's happening to all these people and no one talks about it and everyone just is ashamed. And it's the shame thing that I think is the wrong thing. It's like, you know, we all have really valid reasons for why our brains just couldn't deal with it anymore. And why should we be embarrassed about that? It's nothing we did. It's just it happened to us and we've got to find a way to live with it because it doesn't go away.
I think people worry on two counts, I think. And having dealt with people who've been sectioned in the past, I think people worry about how people will perceive them.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, something we all worry about in some way or other. And also they worry about how their life will continue after that incident.
Yeah,
so, for example, it affects your employment. It affects a lot of things, you know?
I didn't even get into that.
Right.
Because I couldn't, you know, it would have to be like a double the size book to get into, like, what happens next, you know?
Yeah.
A friend of mine, that it's like that. It comes up all the time for her.
You know,
whenever she goes to the doctor, everyone's like, you know, oh, are you okay? How's your head? And because I did privately, it's not on my records. So I only have to talk about it when I want to. And I feel so privileged that I had the money to do that. Because, I mean, I guess a lot of the story is about what I would have been like had I been sectioned. And it would have been a disaster. It would just been an absolute disaster for me if I'd been in that position. So, Yeah, I think it's just important. And to be honest, Tony, I made such a tit of myself in those days. I couldn't get lower, to be honest. So, you know, I don't.
We all cringe at our behaviour back in the day, though. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I was literally out picking fights with large men in pubs, and I was like a slip of a thing. I was just like size 6, and I'd find the angriest dude in the pub and pick a fight with him. I mean, it's just.
Was it South London?
All over London.
I'm trying to remember if we ever met.
It was the Aussie people. You may have. Luckily, hardly anyone took me too seriously. Because you don't. You'd just be like, geez, what's her problem? You know. But mainly in the pubs we were going to, Aussie Cuban pubs. So there was like, my parents also had shares in the Redback in Acton. In fact, that was the site of my worst night going. Luckily, I knew all the bouncers, so I didn't get into too much trouble. But it was embarrassing enough. But you do go, oh God, people are going to see like the worst part of my life. But there's some kind of liberation in that.
But part of me does say that I don't want to read books by people who don't know about things. If you're going to write, this is my favourite phrase, if you're going to write a book about fighting a bull, I want you to have fought a bull. Yeah. And I don't mean that exactly like that. I mean that I want those emotional highs and lows because you can translate them into fiction. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, look at someone like Bukowski or Burroughs or someone like that. You know, there's that being there. They know what it is and they can communicate that so well. And I think that's what your book does. You know, it's not just Star Wars, is it? You know, there's a reality to it.
Yeah, it's definitely not Star Wars.
that's the pull quote on the back of the book. Yeah, it's definitely not Star Wars.
This is not Star Wars.
but the richness of experience is much ignored these days. I think we think, you know, oh, I'll just be a writer. And some of these people who just decide to be writers have little or no life experience, and it shows.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm quite glad that, I mean, I'm in my 40s, so I'm not sort of some sort of spring chicken. I've definitely got a lot of things that have happened that I can put into this. And I think it's great because I feel like I've got stories now. I've got things to say and things to tell.
Yeah, no, definitely. So that's what it's about. It's telling stories, isn't it?
Yeah. So this was almost like, it was obviously a hard journey, but a successful experiment in storytelling. And now you, at the end of it, you're like, I want to tell more. I've got more.
I've got total bug for it, for sure. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
That's what it's all about. I mean, but there's also, I mean, looking at like the press release and stuff, that you work with the charity MQ Transforming Mental Health. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I just sort of wanted to make sure that it was actually going to do some help. So what they do is they actually research people going through mental health crisis episode, anything, you know, if you've got any kind of diagnosis, you can go on one of their trials, they'll pay you to be there, and they use the information to put it towards understanding mental health properly, rather than, you know, I did a lot of research for this book and a lot of it was about psychotherapy and analysis, and you realize that these are just, in some cases, like Jung, who just would honestly get off his head and run around naked in the garden and then be like, oh, I've got a new theory. You know, it's like you wouldn't believe what psychiatry is based on. It's just people just guessing and coming up with things to do with their own minds. And
they're also guessing off the misapprehensions of the previous person who's also guessing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everyone follows seemingly everyone follows someone else. Yeah.
And the whole thing is built on the most ridiculous early beginnings. It's like a ward itself, like a mental health ward. The beginnings are bedlam, where people went and laughed people for being in a crisis. And then we just, it's better than that, but it's still built on that basis. You know, everything needs to just be raised to the ground and begin again, you know, and in some cases, literally, with some of those wards, it's just disgusting. You know, I saw cockroaches on one, and you could see the House of Parliaments, and there's cockroaches everywhere, and you're just like, this is not okay, you know?
But and sometimes a cigar is not a cigar.
Yes. It's a pipe.
So, are you still like donating some of your revenue? Is that why?
Yeah, so I give in 10% of my revenue from every card back to MQ.
That's what I'm talking about. We get this so much. We get so many people who do you know, thoroughly brilliant books, you know, that are waving the flag forever, then they don't donate. They don't get money to these charities.
Yeah, no, it has to be. It has to be. Yeah. And I wanted to put in a load of support lines at the end, but I couldn't get back from any of the charities, and you can't print it without their permission.
Fair enough.
But right. NQ were on board from the start, you know, so... Yeah, they're a really good charity, and there's loads of information online. Like Mind have an amazing website.
Oh, I tell you what, I came across Mind when I was working in my last job, and there's no better. If you're going to put any money,
it's just amazing. Yeah, but they're quite well supported. So
yeah,
I think
they are.
To,
they,
you know,
they do well out of shops and stuff. Yeah,
they do. Yeah, and I just sort of also that. I mean, I don't think you should not support someone because they're well supported, but it's the science aspect, you know. I like science. I like the application of actual research to understand something, and that really, really kind of appeals to me. Because, you know, we're just not getting it right, so we need to start again. And that's kind of what MQ are trying to do. It's just like, let's actually ask people what it feels like.
The Singing Dragon are really good for that. The comics, the publisher, they
they are. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, they're really good.
So they're part of they're part of Jessica Kingsley, if you know them.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'll have a check out. I don't know their stuff at all.
They for a while. They had a period of doing mental health. We went to a launch, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, they did sort of mental health comics and like Get Better comics and stuff like that. You know,
Liminal do kind of.
Yeah, well, Mike used to work for Singing Dragon, so he used to work for Kingsley. Yeah, so maybe that's where. And Mike's good.
The auto bio comics thing is a newer thing. I got into those. Actually, Nick Abadzis recommended me go to Ladies Do Comics, and then I read Nicola Streeton's Billy, Me and You, and from there went on to more of this. Oh, and Glenn Dillon's Now Brown. You know, so went on this big kind of path about more kind of auto bio or mental health comics. And
I think Inflatable Woman as well from Rachel.
I'm reading Wolf at the moment.
It's amazing, yeah, really love
amazing.
It.
Amazing. Her work is extraordinary. Yeah. And I read a lot of self-made hero books, and particularly there's one, Judith Benes-Stendhal, who did When David Lost His Voice, which is just an unbelievable work about a man who gets diagnosed with throat cancer and how it affects his family. It's just beautiful. Utterly beautiful. So, but that's all the comics I read before weren't really that line of comics. They're more sort of, you know, Judge Dredd stuff. So, auto buyers I've really only been reading for the last, well, I guess 10 years ago. It's recent.
They did suddenly spring up, I think, part of the DIY culture, and they sort of came from that, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, it was really interesting, and there's some amazing things happening with it now, and I think it's become this kind of whole genre onto itself. It's
It is a genre Sarah now, Slattery, isn't it?
Definitely.
Massively, and it's really fascinating.
Is that what one of the things that gave you the confidence to try barking? Was this a story that you always had in your head, or was it like?
No, so I was trying to come when Nick was like, just make a comic. I was like, because I was really doing loads of teaching. I was teaching life drawing to animation students, and in the evening, and then I was drawing backgrounds at an animation studio. And I was sort of earning quite good money, but just utterly dead inside from the work I was doing. None of it. The teacher was quite nice, but the animation studio was just like, I just couldn't give a shit about anything I was drawing. You're just like, how, you know, what price your soul sort of thing.
Yeah.
I knew I don't have a commercial style, so I cannot make it in animation. And it might be getting better, but people still want it to look cute. And I do not draw cute. I can't do it. Mine look like, there's a Japanese artist, Nara, who draws these little girls holding, and they've always got a little knife hidden behind their back, or they're smoking a cigarette. And that's mine, it's like that. Like, if I draw something cute, it just looks like it's trying to kill you. So I just don't do it, you know, unless it's good for the story, right? So I knew I wouldn't make it as a commercial animator. And then Nick was like, why don't you just make comics? You love them, you'll be surprised, just get on and do it. And I couldn't come up with an idea, I was just struggling. Because I was getting so depressed, and my partner was like, Stephen was like, just do it about your depression. Why don't you write about that? If that's the thing that's getting in the way, do it about that. And he was the one that said to me about, you know, all this black dog stuff, and I was talking to him about that, and he was like, oh, do you know about Old Shuck, which is, he's from Yorkshire, so that's this, you know, like, it's the Hound of Baskervilles, it's the dog that haunts the moors, and there's a portent of doom. And then I started getting into all of that stuff, and I was like, oh, this is fascinating, actually. There's all this, like, mythology that relates to basically mental health and And from there, it just started building, you know. And then in that time when I was coming up with the idea, that's when I had the two friends sectioned as well. And then it was like, actually, this is bigger than just me. This needs to be about everyone and what happens when you lose it. What happens when your mind collapses?
So what you're saying here is that Stephen is the brains of the app.
I know, did he
letter it?
He is never listening to this episode. I know he's at the end of it. He's already like, oh, what, that comic I lettered? Yeah, like, no. The one I spent 6 months drawing. Yes, that one, thanks.
He's an ideas man.
He actually is, though, to be fair, because that's his job at Kingston. You know, come and go, I've got this idea for the film, and he's like, nah, this is, you need to do that. Like, so he writes film scripts as well, and one of the things he's really good at is story editing. So he's good at that, but he didn't story edit mine before he gets the credit.
I bet
he still doesn't know what it's about, so he gets to read the whole thing.
Was that something we don't always share everything with our partners, do we? Is that
we do talk about it. He knows, because I've got depression, so he knows all about it. Actually, his brother died when he was 23. So I was 23 when my dad died, and he was 23 when his brother died. So we both got this, like, experience of having faced your mortality at quite a young age and what that feels like. Because you're sort of out of step with everyone when that happens. Like, all your mates are going out and getting pissed, and you're like, what if you're dying? You can't do that. You've got to chill out, you know? So you're suddenly really kind of panicky, and it's really a profound kind of part of our relationship that we've kind of been through this epic moment at the same age kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, he knows a lot about that, but there's stuff in the book that I don't know that he knows exactly what it's like in my head when I am in a bad place. And I don't, you know, it's not a nice place to be. So, but that's the point. You've got to go, look, I might look like I'm just a bit, off with fairies, or I'm not concentrating, or I'm being a bit kind of snappy, but actually, you know, there's other things happening. And that's what I was trying to get across.
Yeah. I suppose the question now is, has it helped?
I think the nature of having to draw it in that amount of time was I basically had to kind of relive it. And the experience of trying to get it published is kind of sort of where I've gone, like, life becomes art becomes life. You know, I'm in this. Oh, great. This has been really stressful and intense. And that kind of wasn't the point. But what does help is how many people get in contact with me and talk to me about their problems and what's happened to them, and that they feel like they can go and make a zine, they could go and make a comic now, and they can just talk to someone about it. And that's all I wanted. It's like, I just wanted to be like, look, this happened to me, you're not on your own, especially in the
But do you get people who do you get people who sorry do you get people who sit you down and say, look, this is my problem, as if you're almost there to help?
And I have to say, look, I'm not qualified, I've been through my own disaster. But
you're the right person to point them in the right direction to
happy to do that. I don't mind doing that at all, because you just need that. You know, if I didn't have one person say to me, you've got an anger problem, I don't know where I'd have ended up. So
I suppose it's the nature of the industry now as well, is that not only you were not James Joyce writing in our bedroom and posting it to a publisher, we've got to be out there selling it as well. And that's chatting to people at Angoulême about that. It's actually now 50% of the comic creating process, especially if you're creator owned, you know, getting out there and getting it in people's hands and stuff.
And it's strange because it's crowdfunded, you're just constantly there, just going, hi, you know, here's things. What would you like?
Was that a strange experience, though, Lucy? Because you basically going and say, here, would you like to read a book about my depression? You know,
it was really intense. And I mean, but every single time I did it, I just had such a great time. I did loads of talks and podcasts and things, and everyone was just so welcoming and wonderful about it. And loads of other creators, you know, I'm so proud of the supporters list I've got. There's just an extraordinary amount of talent in there that I just go, blimey, I can't believe, if you told me 2.5 years ago that some of those people's names would be in the back of the book, I just thought you were barking up the wrong tree. I keep using this same word, but it's just amazing.
It's the subtle subliminal marketing going through this episode.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic community.
It's amazing. It's been so, but it's even, you know, like Jeff Lemire back the book early on, was tweeting about it, and he's done the cover quote, you know. He's just an extraordinary bloke, and it's just because he really feels the subject matter, and he's like, yeah, people need to talk about this, this is important. So
a bit of that comes out of his work sometimes. It's more personal work.
Yeah, for sure. He's a really, really nice guy, so thanks, Jeff.
Oh, nice. I'm beginning
Essex County, so
me too, absolutely love it. I'm actually beginning to feel like the small press community in the UK is very unlike, and having traveled now a bit, seeing different art communities and comics communities, I think we're almost a movement. It's almost switched over being like an art movement now, because America they're so, you know, they're such a large country and it's a little bit disjointed. They don't really have that interlocked national community of creators. Well, we know
it's amazing. I went to the first, it was my first Thought Bubble this year, and going into the Majestic on that Friday night and just being like, oh my god, these are all the people that I'm talking to all the time on Twitter, and being able to give them a hug and go, all right, you know, I finally got to sit down and have a beer with Craig Campbell and be doing a comic with, and you're just like, god, we've been chatting for 2 years and we've finally sat down, and I just met so many amazing people. It's just the best community, and it's so supportive.
It really
and
is
encouraging. And as soon as you're in it, because people do that for you, you want to do it back. You're like, yeah, how can I help, you know? It's excellent. I think you're right. I think it is a movement, and one that's just growing constantly.
It really is, you know. It's because this is the only way to get our voices out in a pure way, like you've done, I think, and that's the attraction of it to people who aren't even into comics, you know. They see it as a way to communicate, you know, issues and problems and stories and all sorts of things now, in a way that doesn't involve having to get publishers and having to look 2 years down the line at it being on the slate, or having to get it on the TV script that's rewritten 400 times. You know, there's all these.
So definitely. Obviously, you've already had quite a journey to get to this point, where obviously successfully funded, win-win, chicken dinner. Call back to the roast date. But I thought you'd like that, Dan. But and the book is officially out. What's the date it is officially out?
So it's meant to be March the 5th. But so basically what's been happening is in November, when so the books missed the lakes and they missed Thought Bubble. But Lizzie managed to get some printed herself as a kind of limited edition for Thought Bubble, which was amazing.
Okay.
And then they turned up after that when I had an exhibition I had to do as part of my arts council, and the print was just not good. And it's like, you've seen the digital version where it's obviously black and white, but this was sort of slightly grey in parts and a bit black, and it was inconsistent throughout the whole book. So Unbound, I got the early run, and Lizzie's like, it could be that first off the press problem. And they got sent straight to me, and no one got to check them beforehand. So they were like, look, we'll just do a stock take and we'll just go through and check. And as they were coming over from Slovenia, and as they were coming in, people were checking through them, and it took months. There's 1,500 books.
Wow, okay.
And they found out it's all of them. So they've just, so they've just made
Jesus
a very
Christ.
Brave decision to reprint. So I'm waiting to find out who's reprinting, and if it's who I suggested, they will still be released on this, on the March of the 5th. But if it isn't, then I don't know. It might be a delay.
So they tracked down
the
error.
Waiting to find out.
Was it the printer at fault?
No, it looks like it was something to do with the files. I gave over CMYK files, and it's about how they were then turned into mono. It looks like something like some sort of batch. I don't know. I mean, I showed it to a couple of people, and they were like, it looks like, and their production team agreed. It's Unbound's kind of a weird model where it's all kind of run by freelancers.
Okay.
So there's some in-house team, and they have an in-house production team. But Lizzie is the graphic novel's commissioning editor. So she commissions you, she goes through the project with you, you hand the artwork to her, and then she passes it on to, after doing the proofread, she passes it on to the production team. So it's at that stage that something's gone wrong.
Right.
And, you know, no one's gone, oh, it was me when I did that thing. So everyone's just like, look, what we're going to do. And for me, it's like, look, it's public money, and it's about black. It's a book about black. It can't be a book about slightly grey at this point and a little bit black. Yeah. It has to be black. You know, that's the one thing. So, you know, it was great, because they could have easily gone, look, we've got 1,500 books here, but they're just not, it's not good enough, and they don't look good enough quality, and no one's happy with that. So yeah, they're going to go ahead and reprint them, and hopefully we're still on for that, but I've had to push back. Like, we were booked for Gosh, and we've had to like put a handle on that just in case the books aren't there, and so it's all now suddenly like, so when will they come out?
I mean, hopefully, fingers crossed, the printing all goes well.
Yeah, I think it might not be, hopefully it will still be March, if anything, but I'll just, you know, if anyone's interested, just keep, you know, find me on social media, and I'll certainly be updating as soon as I know anything, you know.
And I guess once the books are there, you'll be doing like a bookstore, you know, comic book stores, and like,
yeah, we're definitely going to do that. Yeah, I've got a few lines up. I'm doing MacPow, I'm booked at the Lakes, I'm doing a thing with Joe Stone in the summer, and not Hackney, I'm doing something else with him.
Oh, you're doing the other one that he's sent out the email about, is that
yeah.
I'm not sure if he's announced it, so I don't think we can say, but we're doing, we'll be at that one. I'm looking forward to that one.
Awesome. Yeah. I think that would be interesting. And then I have applied for LCAP. I don't think I'll get in, because I don't think I'm quite
They're choosing this coming week, so,
I'm
not there for it. I was meant to be there this week, because I'm sort of on the panel, but I'm on holiday now, so I'm not going to be on the panel, but sadly. But yeah,
it's a really good event. I really enjoyed it this year. Yeah, there was some amazing stuff there. And to be honest, I hope I've got enough books to do all of them, because I've applied for Thought Bubble as well. So, I've got other projects lined up. So
What's in the future then, post-barking? Or currently, what are you currently working on?
Yeah. So I'm currently doing a set of zines called How to Build a Fest, and there's like 8 zines. They're all double-sided A4 zines, and each one's based around a letter. And you fold.
Sorry, I think you broke up to me.
That letter.
Sorry to interrupt, Lucy. You broke up with the title to me there. Sorry, mate.
How to Build a Feminist.
Oh, okay.
Now, this is what I saw on your shop.
Quiet topics.
Yeah, I saw in your shop. I've got to appreciate. Any zine that has a letter on each cover, and if you collect a set of 4, it just says fuck.
I'm behind this project.
So they build up, they're going to make a sentence which is fuck this, and each zine folds into the letter. So that's my feminist statement. But I'm part of a group exhibition with Rachel Ball, actually, and Wallace Eads, and a load of other artists. There's like sculptors and painters and audio visual artists, everything. And we do this group exhibition called Women for All Seasons, and it's over National Women's Day International Women's Day in March. So I think that runs from, when do we run from, 4th to the 9th of March. We've got Pride View on Saturday the 7th, and it's in Art Academy in Newington, the back of Elephant and Castle.
Oh, I'll come to that. Yep.
Fun. I'll send you a link, because it should be a good night, actually.
Then
I'm starting, hopefully this week, I'm going to start on Indexed with Fraser Campbell. So he's written great lo-fi sci-fi, and I'm doing the artwork.
Back to 2000 AD. Back we go.
Yeah. I'm really good looking forward to that, because it's just not something that I would necessarily write. And I love
it. Is that what drew you to it, though? Just to sort of like, oh, I've always loved this sort of like these sort of stories. Let's try my hand at it.
Yeah. Well, I backed him on House of Sweets and the one before that. What was it called? The crime one. Bonkers crime.
Fraser puts out great work.
The one with the Frank Quietly cover. I've backed it as well. It'll come to me in a minute. I'll remember it in a minute.
And I just love them both. I think Fraser and Ian are an amazing team together. And then Fraser put a call out just saying, oh, I'm looking for an artist. And I was finishing up Barking, and I was like, oh man, I'd do that. I'd happily draw your stuff. And he's like, yay, you know, because he had Anna Redman on, but she was too busy because she's doing her like degree and stuff. So she had to pull back from that. And then I'm taking on where she is, but I'm doing different style to what she had lined up originally. Okay. But I'm doing it all digitally, and it's all colour, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's like the complete opposite of Barking, which is nice. Because I do a lot of life drawing still, and I do these portraits and stuff with oil bar and sort of like posh finger painting almost, and I cut away with a scalpel, and I want it to look a bit like that, but done on Procreate. So yeah, it would be a completely different bag. So just to kind of flex my colour muscles.
That's interesting, yeah.
And then it's a lead up to my next. So I've got two projects after that I want to do for myself, and I've got my big story art idea, my next graphic novel's called The Bad Old Days, and I want to do a prequel comic to that called Shelter, which is going to be, so the whole thing's going to be set in the kind of London that my dad grew up in, and then the pub that I grew up in Fulham, which is this sort of live music pub. And we had a extraordinary kind of cast of people. We had sort of small-time criminals and antiques dealers and loads of musicians, and it was a really kind of bizarre place. But this is old Fulham, not Fulham now.
Not
this
posh, like Fulham Broadway.
No, it was Fulham. We had a big pub on Fulham Broadway, so it was the Golden Lion. But it was all Irish, Greek, and Caribbean then.
It was more sort of North End Road than it is proper Fulham.
Yeah, very North End Road. And I still know people on North End Road. Yeah, it was absolutely like that. And it changed in the 80s when we got kind of kicked out, literally. And the wine bars kind of, they asked my dad to run a wine bar, and he threw a chair at the head of the brewery and told him to sling a hook. And yeah, that was it. So, you know, we moved on to other places. But I want to set something there, but with the kind of folk mythology stuff as well. So my idea is that everyone came and immigrated. And my dad came out, his family came over from Ireland in the 40s. And it was all there, no dogs, no blacks, no Irish, after them fighting in the Second World War for the British and then turning up and being told to go away again. Yeah. And the same for the Caribbeans, right? So it made this community of people who kind of closed in on themselves. And I like the idea of everyone kind of bringing their folk and mythology with that. So, you know, like if you need like an island, say you've got a cold, often in a town they'll be like, oh, well, you got a cold, you've got to go and see Mick and he'll carry you over that stream and that'll get rid of your cold. You know, like all this stuff. And I love the idea of that still existing in London and people kind of going back in on themselves and calling up their gods. So a bit like American Gods, where you've got your own mythology to sort your problems out, because basically the police don't give a shit. They don't want you here. You're not their people, you know. So yeah, it's all in that universe. It'll make sense when the first short comic comes out, I think, a bit more. But completely different to Barking. It's going to be more like, very different.
I mean, it sounds like hopefully
funnier.
Yeah, you had a long journey to Barking, and now that the gate is opened, you're off. You're off and running, and just want to make more comics.
It feels like Barking was like an exorcism, literally. Like I had to just go, get that off my chest, and now I can just go, oh, I've got these ideas going, and yeah. Like,
but you know what's going to happen now? You're going to be standing behind a table at whatever festival you go at, and you're going to have to explain all this to everyone who looks at your book.
I'm just going to point them to this podcast. Yeah. Please listen to that.
Yeah, let's do that. If you need any business cards or postcards or anything, just let us know and we'll give you something.
Yeah. I'll just explain my depression for the 300th time today. Tourist.
Frankly, read the book. Buy the book, and we can talk about it.
Yeah. We've got a friend, James McCulloch from Scotland, and his technique is he just says, you're going to fucking buy this or not?
Love you, James.
I was next to Gareth Brooks at Hackney, and he just looks at everyone. He just doesn't look at me. I love Gareth, but he just looks at them like, what are you doing here? And they're like, oh, can I buy a book? And he's like, oh, yeah, I suppose so. You know? I'm trying to do the patter, and he's just blanking everyone. It's brilliant. Yeah.
His first tabling ever was with me, Gareth. I'd like to
say
that.
Was it?
Good lad,
We got extremely drunk after. So his missus teaches painting where I do my life drawing. And we did an exhibition together and I got stuck behind the bar and not able to sell any of my work. So I decided that I'd get back and drink a lot of the bar. And Gareth was quite up for that. So
he told me off because I kept saying on the podcast he's always drunk. He says, can you stop saying I'm always drunk? When you're...
To be fair, he's not always drunk, but he can put it away.
Yeah, he's a good lad.
We were very, very drunk that night. And it was
he was one of our earliest guests on here. Yeah, he was one
was
of our...
He?
Yeah,
he's solid. He's a good bloke.
Yeah, definitely. Good stuff.
So where can people find you on social media, etc., to find out more news about what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, thanks for crowdfunding. I am literally everywhere. So I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram under @LucySullivanUK. The UK thing is just because there's this horrible book called Lucy Sullivan's Getting Married, and there's someone who is staunchly never getting married.
Oh, is that you?
No, it's not me. Yeah. But it was part of when I came back from New Zealand, the book was released. So I walked into a bookshop and it was like everywhere. It was just thought I was having a breakdown, literally. Yeah. It was just like, I'm not getting fucking married. I couldn't imagine anything worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can find me on any of those. And yeah, feel free.
Awesome.
Please follow. We'll... Say hi.
Yes.
Oh, and I've got a website as well, lucysullivanuk.com. So it's all,
branding,
all the same
people.
Thing.
Branding
yeah.
people.
Yeah. That's Thank you to Jenny Robbins for telling me to do that, actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very good idea because I know some people have like different names for different things, don't they? So,
yeah. No, I wanted it to be the same thing, but there's a lot of Lucy Sullivans in the world. So the UK thing is not, it's just way before Brexit and any of that stuff. as an Irish national, I can tell you I'm not chuffed about any of that stuff. So
yeah. Well, we'll put lots of links in the show notes, and also we'll put links for like the MQ and things like that as well. So
And I did say I'd say Alison, I'd tell her I'm doing a talk at the Cartoon Museum on the 21st of May. So
cool.
If you're about, come along to that. It'd be an evening as well.
Yeah. Nice stuff.
21st of May. But, yeah, put it in your diaries, people.
Yeah, I mean, it's miles away, right? But it might end up.
It'll
launch,
be here before we know it. It'll be,
the hot ticket.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you for talking to us about that, Lucy.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, nice one.
That's good. Really interesting. Awesome. Yeah.
Lucy's going to stick with us for the rest of the show because she's mad. And she just wants to.
Don't say that.
She wants to talk.
Actually, genuinely.
No, she's not literally mad. But like people that are going to spend the rest of the show with.
No, that is the point. It's quite right. You can say it.
Yeah, that's right. And also, like, we're just going to be talking nonsense for the rest of the show. So,
that's our thing.
Before we get onto the nonsense and great recommendations, do we have any shout outs?
Yep, I've got some.
You've always got some, Tony.
Spark 2 is out in the wilderness now.
Hey!
Yeah, of course.
Monster Spotters Club on the back page. Getting some good feedback, aren't we, V?
Yay! Thank you very much to anyone who just likes our little strip.
Yeah, and Vince is on the cover. Monster Spotters Club is on the cover.
Well, my artwork's on the cover, not me.
You're doing a little sexy
pose. He's not like GQ.
Yeah. It's like the Demi Moore picture all back again.
Oh no!
Only I'm not pregnant.
So if you go to thesparkmag.co.uk, it's a great comic. It aids a great charity, and it's great all ages. And your boy's reading it, weren't he, D?
Yeah, he's reading it as soon as it turned up.
Good
brilliant.
Stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. I'd like to thank you to Damian Edwardson and the Art 92 comics because they I got my Galaxy Grappling Alliance comic through and he did me a lovely poster of Brian versus Pascal.
Oh, that made me laugh so hard. For those who we can't say it again, can we?
No.
You need to go back a few episodes if you want to know who Brian and Pascal are. Listen to the episode with Cliff Cumber, who I'm going to mention in a second.
I want to listen to that episode. I missed it.
He's got a lovely voice.
He's got a lovely voice.
Silky smooth voice.
It's like galaxy chocolate for the ears. Well, unless other brands are available, of course. Like Kinder Eggs.
It's nice chocolate.
Talking about you sort of like making a bit of a movement, he literally, him and Rachel.
Oh, God. You stole my shout out.
No, I was teeing you up for it there.
Oh, yeah, it's feeding you it.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Dan. I feel really bad now.
Please do.
Yeah, as we say, Cliff Cumber and Rachel Lee Carter, what have you done? This week, if you are on Twitter and if you are an artist of any kind or if you liked comics and was part of the small press community, something went a bit viral and
massively.
And it was a good kind of viral. We just want to say that.
Yeah, it's really good.
It was,
even I did one.
Yep.
Thank
you.
Hashtag Rosette. Now, this came about, this is a little story. Cliff found an old photograph of a what was it? She a brothel owner.
Brothel owner.
From 1948, I think. Rosette. I don't know. I don't have her name to hand. But you will have seen her face online, because what started off as a conversation between two fantastic comics creators who were just like, "Yeah, it'd be fun if people just drew pictures of her and we collected it into a zine," became a movement.
Fucking, there's like 100 of them now.
Artists like from all over, no matter what, you know, different mediums, different styles, all based around it's everyone's version of that. What was it? What was the photo?
When you get arrested, you get a photograph taken.
It was the mugshot. Yeah, the mugshot. And you know, this striking woman, and everyone just wanted to take a shot at drawing a picture. And I don't know about you. I was just watching them all just come in, and I had to have a go. Do you know what I mean? It was just
yeah.
I'm doing mine tomorrow morning.
Oh, good stuff!
Awesome.
Yeah, I want to get involved because her eyes are just extraordinary.
There's a deadness but a sharpness to them, isn't there?
Calculating something.
And the cheekbones are so high. Her ears are like elfin ears. She almost doesn't look like a real person.
She looks an awful lot like one of my cousins, actually.
Okay.
I wonder if there's Irish blood going on there. The ears are very, very, very familiar.
If I met her in...
Yeah, Sullivans get around. We're, you know, one of those families. We're bloody everywhere. So, you know,
genuinely scary.
Yeah, but if I met her in the church, Lucy, I'd probably buy her a drink.
She's got pretty good lipstick, to be fair.
Yeah, I think so.
You'd be drunk enough that it's the kind of
lipstick where they've gone like over the lips though, like properly.
She's painted it on, but that's the other thing that's calculated. She's done that for a reason, so she's trying to manipulate you just in the way she's put a lipstick on. She's quite something.
Yeah, it's an astonishing image, and like we say, all the artwork hashtag Rosette. Just look at it online. I mean, it's wonderful just seeing this take off the way it is, and it's just creativity. Like pure and simple.
So it was Cliff and Rachel Leacart. They're the two people who are responsible for this, aren't they?
And it's also creativity that isn't like, hey, professional artist, you do this. It doesn't matter if you're an artist. It doesn't matter who you are. If you want to draw a picture of this person, do it. Put the hashtag Rosette. Copy those guys in as well, and they will retweet it. And you know, it is a real movement. And it's just been fun. It's been real fun watching it, and sort of.
Someone's got to do a whole comic about it soon.
Yeah, I think Cliff said he was going to do that, didn't he? Yeah. Oh,
good stuff.
Because there's not much known about her. Yeah, because there's not much known about her, because there was an interview with her, but the shorthand that it was written in, no one can understand it anymore because of the type of shorthand that it was.
It must be someone who can do it.
I'll make it up.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what comic that would be, Tony.
Yeah. I think I know her anyway. I think I was hanging about with her in the late 60s.
Is she going to become part of the Cockney Kung Fu universe in some way?
There is a Cockney Kung Fu-ish about her, isn't there?
Mm.
Well, anyone...
But what's your book? Is it Hall Chronicles?
Yeah. Do you know what?
She's like perfect for that, really, isn't she?
She is a bit, isn't she? Yeah.
I haven't read it yet, but I'm desperate to read it.
I'll send you a copy. I'll stick one into you now.
That'd be amazing. I used to go to Soho all the time when I was a teenager and hang out in like Madame Jojo's and stuff.
Well, you're like Cockney Kung Fu takes place in the alleyway.
But loads of our strippers were sex workers as well, and I used to talk to them a lot, you know, and it was varying kind of levels of stories and things like that.
Yeah, that's where it came from for me. I was sick of all these movies of them being sort of, they look like supermodels or something, you know, and they're just all different. Yeah, that's where it came from for me.
I heard your Lakes podcast and it was really
interesting. I love Pete. Sarah's
great. It was really interesting to hear all about it. It made me go, I need to read that. That sounds great.
I shall send it to you tonight.
Thank you, appreciate it. I'll send you some zines or something.
Comics are all about the love. I love this.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any other shout outs that they want?
Atomic Hercules, we're over the amount now. Yeah, bring it on. I've just
Hercules,
had a lovely bit of...
Hercules.
Sorry. Just had some fan. Oh my god! Just had some fan art through from Mr. McCune. He's done one that looks great.
While
we've been recording. Yeah, well pleased with that. We've done our stretch goals now. We had a meet up, me and him. There's a little extra story that we've done with how me and him met. Me and Mr. Fout met.
Oh my god!
Which I sent you, didn't I? I sent you the script.
Yeah, it's like Dirty Dancing. Except mixed with the Italian job.
Except it happens on the top deck of a bus.
What can you say? Yeah, but back to people.
Thank you, everyone who's backed in. I appreciate everyone who's backed in. There's some really, really nice people that have backed in. It's great, yeah. Good stuff.
And from great comics to come to great comics to recommend now. It's our recommendation section. I tell you what, the time has flown. I don't know.
It really is.
I was going to do. I was going to do two babes, but I'm going to do one now because time's dragging on. So I'll do one.
Are you sure, babes? You can do two if you want, babes.
I'm all right, babes. So you sure, babes? I'll go last if you don't mind because I think ours. I think that you.
I mean, if you want to do two, you can do the short one at the very beginning.
No, I'll leave it because I'll leave it for next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So well, that's totally. That's taking the wind. Yeah. The guests can go.
Yeah, sounds good.
Taking the wind out of our sails, Tony. So
sorry, babes.
Lucy, what would you like to recommend?
I was thinking because I'm reading so much long form stuff at the moment. I've just finished Book of Thoughts, Rob Davis, and I do recommend that whole Mother of Southern trilogy. But actually, the book that stuck with me from my enormous reading path from all the festivals is Gareth. Hopkins Petrichor, is that with
love
good
it.
Comics?
Yeah.
It's just an amazing book, and I think about it a lot. You know, I read it on the train going to Hackney, actually, and I was on the overground crying my eyes out at 9 in the morning. Thanks, Gareth. And I did tell him off for it when I saw him. You know, it's such a powerful piece, and I think it's that his sort of, I love his surreal kind of artwork anyway, but he's found that perfect way to match it with some really powerful dialogue. So I think that's a really wonderful piece.
It really has it has a power, that book, as well, because I remember reading a lot of interviews. I mean, I bought the book and I hadn't got around to reading it, and a lot of reviews and stuff were sort of saying about how emotional and how people were getting about it, and it was almost like I thought, right, come on then, Gareth, let's see what you got. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, knowing his sort of style of artwork and, you know, the words, and it really is. It gets you in it.
Very strong. Because it's honest, you know, he's written.
Yeah, it really is.
Written from the heart. So, I mean, it's literally his own words in there. Rather than him sort of doing the ghost stories or whatnot.
Because there's a sort of really swirl. Powerful. There's a real swirl, and it catches you, really catches you, and it absorbs you, the artwork. And then he adds this sort of super personal. You know, it's because you're involved in it, it comes across as like a thought, almost, a lot of his dialogue, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. You can feel the kind of rawness of it. It's clearly not edited at all. I think that's all the better for it, you know, because it's definitely. Speaking from the heart, really. So, I think that's amazing.
And an amazing Paul quote on the back.
Yes. Like, really? Did you? I didn't realize it. Well, you know, as soon as I finished it, I was too busy crying. I was just like, Christ, what have you done to me?
You'll be like that later after the show. It's fine.
And Gareth is genuinely one of the nicest people ever.
He's lovely. And he did a Ladies Do Comics talk about that book actually before it came out, so it was really nice to hear about the process behind it and what it was, and and his artwork. I hadn't realized that a lot of his artwork is like breaking down old comics, you know, like he'll break down Kirby panels and stuff like that. It's really fascinating. Loads of 2000 AD. He showed us one, he's like, look, it's Judge Dredd's shoulder armor, and you're like, oh my god, it's like this, you know. But I never got it, and I like the kind of mystery that you can find whatever you want in his artwork as well. It's really, really powerful.
Yeah, awesome. Good choice.
Who would like to go next?
I don't mind going up.
Go on, Dan.
Well, quickly shout out, Vince gave me his devil sketchbook. It's actually fantastic.
Oh, thanks, Dan.
I need to get another one because I gave mine to Cliff Cumber when I met him, so I need to get another one.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Sorry.
There's a ton of stuff in there I haven't seen before.
Yeah,
so it's really nice. Nice to see.
Oh, good. And, thanks, Dan. I can't handle praise, so move on.
The other book, I was bought a copy of Dave Broughton's Slaughterhawk. Troops. That's a solid bit of kit right there. It definitely feels like it can be this torn straight out of a 2000 AD issue. It's very much kind of like the stylization. He's kind of... I think Dave's. Would you say he's worked towards that, or he's just kind of?
Oh yeah, he certainly appeared in the 2000 AD sort of fan comics and stuff like that. Mm. Yeah, he certainly has. Yeah, he's done a lot of Dread and Strontium Dog, and he's a big. I think he's a Prog 1 guy, isn't he? I think he started at Prog 1.
Really? Wow. Yeah, okay.
So. Yeah.
Bloody
yeah.
Hell.
It's still got that kind of that British kind of flavour of harshness. There's little kind of drops in of really. You kind of read in story and it's kind of like there's violence and action, and then someone drops in a line. It's like bloody hell. That's pretty sharp. He's yeah. Yeah, it's really nicely done at
there's
points.
There's a little bit of the martial law in there as well, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's a little sort of... It's like taking bits and pieces of, like, these the great 2000 AD writers and how who's, like, inspired him. And it's gone into the comic. So yeah. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Nice.
I'd recommend checking out his Shaman Cain series as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Shaman Cain stuff. Yeah. He loves that stuff, yeah.
And check him out on Instagram and stuff, because he's always working.
He's relentless.
Yeah.
He's just constantly doing it. I mean, he was doing that stuff, and then he did that comic with you, Tony. And I was like, buddy, how did he do this at the same time?
Yeah, we did the Silver Surfer comic, didn't we? Just for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we did the stuff. He's done stuff for me. He did some illustrated articles at Down the Tubes with me, and he did something for the Nottingham charity anthology with me. Yeah, we've worked together a few times. He's a great... He's for anyone looking to work with an artist, I'd say he's a joy to work with, actually. He's really, really fun. He you know, he never lets you down with times and, you know, deadlines and stuff. It's good company, really is. Yeah,
fantastic.
Nice. Okay. Do you want to go first, or do you, or shall I, Tony?
You go first, baby cakes.
All right. Okay. Thanks, babe. The book I'm going to talk about today was one of my cover picks from this week.
Oh yeah. I know.
For those who don't know, when we do it each week, we do a Comixology, a digital comic shelf browse, shall we say, and because Twitter you can only pick four images, we just pick our top four covers just to share the love about fantastic books. And normally with that, I don't always buy the books. Sometimes they're a fantastic cover, but then when you look inside, you're like, or you know, another book gets your fancy more. But I definitely saw one, loved it, read the synopsis, and had to get it. And that is Backtrack issue one. Now this is from Oni Press and Lionforge Comics, who are Lionforge is sort of like a sub part of Oni Press.
They're
an
imprint, aren't they? Of Oni, I think that's
the
right.
I was looking for. Yeah. It's the first time I've picked up a book from Lionforge, but very good indeed. Anyway, the synopsis is this: guilt weighs heavy on former criminal wheelman Allison, who led an illicit life that left her shattered into pieces, but when she hears about a massive cross-history car race that grants the winner a chance to correct a single mistake in their life, Allison will drive from the Big Bang to the death knell of the universe for the grand prize. So
that
basically
sounds great.
It's a car race through history now.
Is it like Top Gear?
Yeah it is, but without the twats. This is the creators are written by Brian Joynes, illustrated by Jake Elphick, coloured by Doug Garback, lettered by friend of the show Jim Campbell.
Hey.
Yay! He letters fucking everything, that boy.
Yep.
The cover that I profess my love for was Marco da Alfonso. The cover was also designed by Mike Reddy, which is a design that seems to flow through to following issues. Edited by Jasmine Amiri. That's the whole team. But sometimes on your travels you come across a cover and think, that looks pretty cool, and like then you read the synopsis and think, wow, that sounds even better. But sometimes when you buy the book, it's harsh when the cover's good and the synopsis is good. I mean, we all want those two things to be great, don't we? But
yeah,
also,
there's a lot of companies that put out books that are amazing covers and a great idea, and you open it up and you go, oh, dear.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Yes.
There was a lot of the 90s for me. Amazing cover. And then
you ain't wrong.
The artwork was just rubbish. And I can't do that.
Yeah. And that was kind of, I had this trepidation going into it because I thought, oh, I hope it can live up to the brilliance of those two teases of a story that I might love. Well, if you want something that sort of internally delivers and surpasses both of those, then Backtrack is for you, because I fucking love this book.
Oh, cool.
Shorthand, if you love fast-paced car chases and time travel stories like Chrononauts, then you'll love this. I know that was quite a big thing. Are they doing a second series? Chrononauts. I think Mark Miller's
have
doing
they?
Another
I think
one.
They might have done.
They might have done.
I didn't read the first one. I really must get around to it.
It is a really fun story, actually. It's just time travel's crazy, so let's just lean into it. And also, if you like well-crafted action scenes, you'll love this. And if you like layered, flawed, but badass heroines in your books, then this is for you. And fuck, if you just want a good time with a comic, then this is for you. I was really, really impressed with this. In terms of the story, there's a certain amount of mystery and devilishness to the setup. I won't spoil too much, but there's a mysterious benefactor who basically approaches the main character, who's basically down on the getaway driver, and they sort of give him the ultimate deal. And that kind of reminded me of it's like a classic Faustian pact, you know. Oh, you know how your life is shit. Well, if you do this, you know, this could make it better. It has a little bit of a modern flavour and sci-fi twist to that conversation, which I haven't seen before, and I'm not quite sure how it happened. But yeah, so that pulled me into the story, and I didn't question it too much. Sometimes when you read a story, there's these moments that take you out of it, and you question it. But this one doesn't. It rolls at such a pace.
Right.
I will say, being someone who has attempted to draw a story with cars racing along dangerous stretches of tarmac, I can say this. If this had come out before I started work on Murder Road, then I would have been stealing many of the visual tricks that they used on this, left, right, and centre. I mean, the script is badass. Brian Joynes has written a badass script, and there's scope to explore even more as like the series rumbles on. But fucking goddamn, Jake Elphick is an artist to watch, I think. He's got a style that's kind of a cross between, I mean, I'm going to use a big names here.
Here we go.
It's a cross between Daniel Warren Johnson.
Wow.
And another one, more local, the son of Ken, Mark Hughes. Anyone who's seen his work on Instagram and will know that. Garbark's colours are pitch perfect for the tale as well. There's some lovely neon magentas being used for the more sci-fi moments, like the time travel-y type bits. Like neon as a background is a bold choice, and it works. And well, Jim Campbell, well, he's a boss, so he absolutely smashes it. I will say one thing about his lettering. He used an interesting technique. When someone's talking quietly, the words are like 40% black rather than a smaller font.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Which I thought that was a nice touch, so I'll be stealing that myself. the story doesn't fuck around, and by the end of issue one, you're neck deep in like basically an adrenaline-fueled story that I can't wait to read the next part of. And if there's any dinosaur fans out there, you won't be disappointed. I'll say no more than that. It's probably going to be a limited series. It feels like, you know the sort of books I like, people. Normally they're like, you know, movies in four issues. That's the sort of stuff I like to get. But I got this on Comixology for $2.49, which is my upper tier for digital purchases.
Give it a couple of months, it'll drop to £1.49.
Yeah. Do only press drop their prices quickly?
I'm not sure, actually. I'll have to have a look. Yeah,
I know some people do quickly, don't they, on Comixology? But this book delivers so much that I've actually subscribed to it now. So, you know, I just thought...
Oh, good man.
Yeah. So if you get a chance to check it out, please do so. The next issue comes out 18th of March from the back. And from the looks of the cover, we'll be getting muscle cars riding alongside the likes of a Ben-Hur chariot race. Take my money. Take my fucking money. Backtrack. It's just really great. If you just want, you know, just balls to the wall, just good fun stuff. Good comics with actual characters in it, then definitely check this out.
So, I'll be making use of Comixology on holiday, so I shall download that one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'll be interested to see what you think about it.
I'll let you know. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, take it away, Tanner.
Okay, so mine is, buckle in, 336 pages of this one.
What,
so,
your notes?
Yeah, just my notes. Yeah. So I was very lucky to be sent an early copy of Dragman, which is a new book from Stephen.
Oh, amazing. You lucky man.
I know, I'm very lucky. And then I read it, Stephen sent it through to me, I read it, and then I walked in the office, and Sam from Nobrow said...
Stephen Appleby, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, Stephen Appleby, that's him, yeah. And then Sam came through and said, oh, we've got a copy of this, the... Jonathan Caper sent it through for us to have a look at, and it was the actual copy, and it's an impressive book. Like I say, it's 336 pages, hardback, full colour, $18.99, published by Jonathan Cape. It's released in the UK on March 12th, And it's released in the US on April the 7th. And I think it's only just gone into Diamond Preview. So that shows how far in advance we are from the American publication. And also I am from it actually coming out, which I'm really chuffed about. I've been speaking to Stephen a bit about it. And I'll talk about that in a second. But the story, so I'll read you the synopsis. Dragman tells the story of August Crimp. August Crimp, it may be the greatest name ever of a person in a comic. I love that name. A man who has superpowers when he puts on women's clothes. August loves wearing a dress, but is deeply ashamed of his compulsion and terrified of rejection should it ever come out. So he tells no one, not even his wife. His wife's called Mary Mary because she was named after two female relatives, and they both were called Mary. And neither was told who had the first name in her. You know, it's like that. It's quirky. But then one day, a little girl falls from the rooftop cafe at the art museum, and August has no choice but to fly and save her, an event witnessed by hundreds of people. And August Crimp's life is never the same again. So you can see that it is a funny story, but it has parallels, if you know Stephen, to Stephen's life. Now, Stephen is a trans person. I've had a chat with Stephen over the DMs this week and asked him his preferred pronoun, and it is him. So don't jump on me for me calling him a him. I know I'm sort of slightly...
And isn't he transvestite rather than a trans? He's not transgender, is he? He's like quite happy to. Oh, he did a ladies do comics, and he's a man who wears women's clothes. He's transvestite want to be referred to as a woman.
Well, I don't think he'll mind me saying this, but he said he's quite happy for me to refer to him as a man in the respect of his comics work. But if he, for example, was out in a restaurant or in a taxi, he would rather be called her because he puts a lot of effort in.
Yeah, like, he looks amazing.
Yeah,
looks
amazing. Exactly. Yeah. So I've long been a fan of Stephen's work. He's got a really individual style. It is really interesting the way he works. But so I got this, and I had a read for it, and I had a little chat with him. And no spoilers. We may have him as a guest at some point in the future because he'd like to do an interview, and I would like to interview him about it, as we all would. And I reread it, and in its physical form, I don't think you can actually beat the page on a book and the colour on off the page in a real life book like this.
Yeah.
But it's not only a sort of. I mean, Stephen does the surreal really well. There's a potty surrealness to his stuff that is sort of crazy, but he for me, he hits that point where I hate it when things are surreal and suddenly they become fantasy or magical. You know, I think there's room in the world for just surreal without it having to become some kind of sort of something that's going to sit next to Game of Thrones on the shelf in a bookshop. And I think I love the use of surreal as a counterpoint to satire and as a counterpoint to real life, and he does that really well. But it is a superhero story. It's a superhero story that relates to certain things. It's also quite a touching romance, actually. There's an element of him meeting his wife and them getting on. There's a really lovely moment where they meet in a shop, and he's still dressed as a man at this point, and he's listening to The Fall on his headphones, and Mary Mary comes up to him and says, "Oh, you know, what you're listening to?" And he says, "Oh, I'm listening to The Fall." And she says, "Well, I don't think The Fall are the best band to listen to if you're picking out paint for your front room, are they, really?" And this just moments like that are just utter genius. If they're not real life, they should be. Yeah, if they're not drawn from real life, then they certainly should be. So there's a didactic morality tale going on. There's stuff going on that is below the surface and is very cleverly communicated. And what we talked about earlier with you, Lucy, is that I don't want to be hit over the head with stuff, but I want to be informed and educated through a comic. And I think
he's got that gift of like just taking you on to a place where it's all resolved in one tiny little moment, and it's beautiful. Well, his talk was amazing, and
oh, brilliant!
I'm so jealous that you got to read it already.
Yeah, I know. I was really pleased. Yeah, there's a thriller element to it. He gets blackmailed at one point by the babysitter and stuff, and there's little moments like that. And it's also kind of in the afterward. Stephen said, "Look, I am not August Crimp, you know." There are certain similarities for me. It's almost a speculative biography with an autobiographical touchstone. That's how I described it in a review I wrote, and I stand by that. There's moments in it that are educational about people dressing as women, men dressing as women. You know, I wrote it with some trepidation as a sort of 50-something, rather grumpy straight male.
Grumpy?
I don't know whether. I mean, it was sent to me to read and to review, so I think I'm allowed to read and review it. But so it's almost out of my own comfort zone that I don't I had to be careful. I really did think a lot about it before, which is one of the reasons I had a discussion with him about his pronoun, etc. But it did absolutely and totally amuse me, and I was totally absorbed by it. It's 300 odd pages, and I read it in one sitting twice. Yeah, I went through it, wow, and I read it without stopping. That's both amazing. Times. Sorry, mate.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really brilliant.
It's really. Warmly, there's a warm nostalgia as well about comics. There's one of the early images is a double page spread, which I put in the review. And if you look here, just down at the bottom, it says this is a double page spread from the unpublished copy of Dragman 1. And I thought that shows a love for comics as well. That shows that's a little nod at us and, you know, the old school comic, you know, superhero comics fans of the, you know, Marvel UK and all that sort of thing. It's a book that benefits as well. From examining the life of someone who doesn't reach or is trying to reach their own personal empowerment. And I think that's exactly what he does in that. The whole, it's not on the nose at all, but there is a relevance to him. Every time he puts on tights, he is empowered. You know, it's literally what it is, isn't it? You know, he finds personal empowerment by dressing up as a superhero in, and also at the same time dressing up as a woman, which is a distinction that, you know, is obvious from it, but is so well done, and is done with a real sense of humour and a real quirkiness and a distinctive style and stuff that, you know, he wraps a very clever instructional element to it with a superhero, a Capes and Cows sort of genre book. It's littered full of lovely quotes as well. So there's a brilliant moment where he puts on the tights and he says, "That's the first time I flew." And there's this, it's really poignant. And when you think that's the first time I flew, you could read it on 11. You could think, oh, well, that's when he became a superhero. And, you know, we all think that, but that's not what it is about. You know, it's the first time he was freed in a way, you know, he flew away and he was freed from, you know, he realized what he should be doing or what he,
I love,
you know,
dialogue like that.
Absolutely brilliant. It's also about secrets. It's about the nature of secrets and how we keep them from people. And he uses the method of talking about a secret identity as a way of showing how he himself, maybe, or certainly August Crimp, kept secret from his friends and family that he was dressing as a woman, but in the way that August Crimp was dressing as a superhero as well. And it's the nature of secrets. It's not always the actual secret that hurts people, but the fact that it was kept from someone. So Mary, named twice, there's a lovely scene where they meet and they're having dinner, and he says, "Look," and she says, "Look, I found a box and it had all your stuff in it, and the box accidentally came undone, and I looked at it, and she's hurt. You can tell she's hurt, but she's not hurt by the fact that he dressed as a woman. She's hurt by the fact that he never told her." Really lovely moments, like genuinely book, like the book is full of moments like that. It's a book of discoveries and it's a book of revelations, and as August Crimp learns about himself, we watch and we learn about him, and we also learn about other things. We learn, you know, we learn about the world around him, and we learn about other things that are counterpointed by Stephen's like absurdist and hilarious moments involving the superhero community. He does that really well. They go to a superhero club at one point, which is an analogy, I suspect, maybe. Maybe I'm stretching a little bit, but maybe an analogy for a gay club, possibly. There's moments of that in there. And there's a sort of slightly over-friendly Lothario superhero character called Hindsight. There's a sort of quieter superhero called... Yeah, we've all got that. There's a superhero called Pipe, who can use his powers to transport people to this sort of secret, private and hidden superhero club where you can only get in if you're a member or you know someone who is. There's a character called Marsupial Man, who's very angry, whose catchphrase is, "What's in my man pouch today, scumbags?"
Sorry. I knew that was going to be good. I almost started laughing before you said it.
It's clearly based on me. It's a personal favourite of mine. It's an old drunk man who sits at the bar and he just rants at people, and he's an alcoholic, and he's called the Believer. And his power was that he used to be able to believe in things, but of course his powers have all gone away because he now can't. Dragman's got a companion, like a sidekick, called Dog Girl. And her power is she's got super smelling ability. That's quite cool. It's really good. There's scattered amongst it are some text pieces which on occasion are a little bit darker than the main narrative. And there's also a little side story going on in it about how you can sell your soul. You can actually sell your soul for cash. And there's one girl, I think it's the babysitter, who complains that her parents have sold their souls and they've become like super cruel in doing so. And, you know, that's a parallel, a metaphor for other things that are going on. And one of the lines I picked out of one of the text pieces is, there's nothing quite so sublime as the frisson he gets when the soul of a dirty girl slides into his system, which is like a horrible line, but you can sell your soul to people and they can then make use of them. It's just, yeah, that says something, doesn't it? There's something going on there beyond what you see on the page, perhaps, which is always a good thing. And it's something that bears me rereading it as well. It's got, it uses that technique of that we've seen quite a few times. Where you see the flashbacks to the times before are done in a limited color palette, a sort of gray and blue, and the full color pages are for the present day, which I kind of like that. I like that distinction. It saves a lot of mucking about. And that's where Nicola Shering came on and did a lot of the watercolor stuff on the full color pages. If you go to Never Write Anything, you can see some of them. I've stuck a couple of them up online, and that's a real part of it. There's a real brightness, there's a real absolutely gorgeous pages. You would just literally drink them in. And the way that Stephen works is he's quite a noodler. There's a lot going on. There's like little cars in the background, little things going on in the side of panels, and other characters appearing. And yeah, it's a real joy to spend some time on some, especially on the double page spreads that he puts in there. But yeah, I'm really privileged to see it. I know it's getting a launch at GOSH. We'll stick it in the show notes, Vince, because I can't really make a note of when it is. But
it's the week after the one I was going to do. It's like March the 14th or something. I think it's the week after. Yeah, it looks great. Okay. I'm hoping to go.
If you go to Boys Own Adventures, the Don's blog, I think he's put stuff up about it today. Yeah, if you go to penguin.co.uk, you can pre-order the book. You can find out more about other work by Stephen. He's done some great stuff. He did some work with Black Francis, the guy who was in the Pixies. They did a book together. Some really interesting stuff. You go to stephenappleby.com. You can follow him on Twitter at stephenappleby. Yeah, good stuff. Genuinely, watch this space. I'll say it now, and we're quite good at this, guys, now, at picking people who are going to win awards. I think this book is going to win the awards come awards season. It's definitely up there for me. Really is.
Wow. Amazing.
Nice one.
Remember good. Where you heard that first.
Yeah.
There you go. So what a fantastic group of books for you to go forth and check out or pre-order or whatever you're going to do on your coming week. But we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. We certainly did.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, time just flew. And thank you to Lucy again for joining us, taking time out of our busy schedule.
Yeah, it's been great, mate.
Cheers.
Yeah, so really appreciate it. It's been great. I've got loads more books to buy now, and I've got a huge reading pile already. So
we will have,
really
yeah.
Curse
yeah.
You.
Yeah, everyone curses us. But if you want to curse us via email, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Nothing. I get a segue like that, and I get nothing.
That's very good.
I guess, yeah, I shouldn't break up my flow. Cause... but yeah, look, I had that haircut at one point, but I did have that haircut.
Oh, you need the pictures.
No, I had that haircut before he became popular, and then I stopped it.
Dan's got a little archive of pictures of you. We know that for a fact.
I do, yeah. Well, no, it's not a pictures of Vince. They're people who look like Vince.
Right,
yeah.
I have a real issue with this.
He does as well.
You know what the favorite? You know what the favorite one is?
I know, and you can fuck off.
It sounds like it should be Dan.
Don't say the one you're going to say, Dan. Which one is it?
It's the McDonald's man.
Fuck you! Fuck you!
Should I put?
No.
I see if I
can... No. No. Right.
There's one I missed and I couldn't find it. There was like
boo fucking who.
Two guys anyway, on a date on the Guardian. Like, I couldn't find it again.
Yeah.
Oh well. You'll live.
I'll email the editor tomorrow.
If you are that man who went on that date, please email in.
Email awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at the Awesome Pod. We'll be announcing future guests and basically retweeting and just getting the word out about all good things comics. We've got a bunch of great guests coming up over the next few. Well, we've scheduled in the next couple of months, haven't we?
Yep.
So we can just sit back and read comics or make comics or whatever we do. Anyway, and if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And likewise, if you do Facebook and you actually want to talk about creating comics or, you know, going to conventions, or maybe you're making your first comic and you want some advice, then join the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk. where we post up the issue, you know, the episodes as they go live. So if you want to continue the conversation there, just start that thread. And there's a great group of community of people on there as well. Right. So, yeah. So it's the only reason I look at Facebook.
And me.
Yeah. Well, I look at you on Facebook, but I look at you anyway.
True.
thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review to get the word out about the show so more people discover great indie books left, right and centre. And if you listen to us on any other networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on the now infamous pod. The A on my mask stands for the word aware of people who may actually know who created me.
Oh, that's a deep cut.
Deep cut, that one, my friends.
I know. Do you want to explain that one?
Yeah, it's the fact that there was a Captain America: The End comic came out, and credited as creating Captain America was Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. Yeah, which is clearly wrong.
They've acknowledged that, haven't they? They fucked that up.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Simon, Stan Lee didn't create Captain America. It's a shame. Whether they acknowledge it or not, I saw the editor go, "We made a mistake."
Yeah,
I think someone needs to say to him, "Yeah, did you make the mistake?" You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It had gone through like a copy editor, and if they didn't pick it up, they can technically say we made a mistake.
Yeah,
I suppose so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who wrote it? I want to know.
But someone should have said, "Well done." That's not right.
The importance of editors, people.
Yeah, can you believe it? Marvel Comics miscredited.
I know.
There's been quite a few hot takes on editors this week on Twitter.
There has been there.
Yeah. Not all of them great, to be honest.
What are you talking about? Something negative on Twitter? Get out of here.
Go back to that Hugo Borland show that we did on editing. It's a fantastic one.
There you go. Yeah.
Hugo's a good lad.
If you want to find out what an editor does, listen to that.
Yeah. And speaking of Twitter, etc., where can people find us online? Tony?
NeverIronThing.blogspot.com. If you go on there, you can see some images from Dragman. If you follow me, Ezohyz.
And where can people buy your comics?
NeverIronAnything.bigcartel.com.
You make good comics, dude. You should try selling them.
I know, I should really go there. Every time I get that bill from Big Cartel, I think, I haven't really mentioned that any recently. Yeah.
That's good advice to anyone in small press.
Maybe
try selling them. You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com. I've just finished issue 17, and hopefully that'll get up on Comic House this week. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Another killer issue, Dan. It's a story I don't know where it's going. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I've been showing some of those pages that have been going up to you last year about October, November time. There's pages in this issue that have just gone up that I showed you about 2 months ago.
Oh, the one we talked about. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
The importance of getting ahead of schedule.
I got way ahead on that, and it was brilliant. I recommend artists do it all the time.
Yeah, I'm going to try and do it. You can find more of my artwork and general rambling on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. And Lucy, thank you again. Where can people find you again?
At Lucy Sullivan UK on most of the socials, and my website is lucysullivanuk.com.
There you go. Cool. A branding master. look out for the book Barking when it goes live.
Hopefully
it's
next
amazing
month. I'll be shouting about it when I can.
I'll remind us.
We'll mention on the show. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I know we saw a PDF, but I want the printed copy of that.
Yes, so do I.
Sore subjects. And on on that bombshell, thank you for listening, everyone. Go forth, have a brilliant week, read loads of comics, create loads of art, hashtag Rosette. Do it.
Good one.
And from Dan, Tony, Lucy and myself, have a brilliant week. And what do they do, guys?
Stay
awesome.
Stay awesome.
It's always shit.
That's what it's going to be.
We did do it once, right?
So
yeah, we kind of.
That's good then, isn't it? We've only.
I like your go forth and read comics better. I think that's.
There you go.
You know,
Broad.
Less 90s.
bullies me into doing it, Lucy. I don't like to do it. It makes me do it.
I know. I do actually say awesome a lot, being a bit Antipodean, which is, you know, I realise it's a bit naff, but yeah. It always sounds funny in British voices, I think.
Yeah. Good for we didn't brand our show after it.
It's a brilliant show name.
Finally. Good.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Oh, you're still recording?
Yeah.